welcome to another installment of Elder Geek Interviews. This is Gavin here, back in the host seat. Please excuse any ambient noise on my part. I am currently location scouting for a convention I may or may not be going to in the future, so there may just be a little bit of noise on my end. But on my opposite end here, the subject for this installment is Mr. Ben Bradley. Hello, Ben.
Hi.
Okay, and for those of you that don't know, Ben is the one and only developer, if I'm not mistaken, of the upcoming music rhythm title, Substream. So before we get into your game here, Ben, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background? What led you to designing your own video game?
My background's similar to quite a lot of indie developers, where I was working in the mainstream industry and I held a job there for a few years and learned how to... program. I was working on Wii and PSP games, and I sort of felt it was getting a bit repetitive, so I just sort of left one day, and I'm living off my savings now and developing on my own.
Very cool. Very risky, too, especially the genre that you're going to go into here. Especially, with everyone claiming the market oversaturated here, what led you to the notion that you wanted to develop a music rhythm game specifically?
There's been quite a lot of them lately, especially there's been quite a lot of them more since I actually started working on this game, but the route that a lot of people seem to be going down at the moment is to analyze your own music and look at your music collection. So I think that's, that's a lot of fun, but there's a limit to the amount of data you can get out of that, and I wanted to try something different where I really looked at the music myself and sort of used a design process to take the feelings out of the music, and more, it's a lot more information you can get out by designing rather than just trying to see where the beat is, I guess.
All right. So before we go into anything deeper, why don't you tell us a little bit about Substream and how people are going to get it?
Okay, so it's going to be for the PC. It's going to be downloadable from wherever it can be downloaded. I don't know yet. We'll see. I might look at some other platforms, but at the moment it's being developed for PC. So.
Very cool. What is Substream? I mean, what's it? How does it look? How does it play?
Okay, so it's quite similar to Star Fox, and Star Fox on the SNES was one of my inspirations originally. I really liked that game when it first came out. It was sort of just the fact that it was 3D really blew my mind at the time. So that stuck with me, and it's in that kind of vein. You're flying over terrain, and the environment will be quite different for each level that you play. Each level is going to be really connected to the music that's playing. So, for example, if there's folk music, it's going to look like a sort of watery or grassy environment, quite nice, sun shining, rainbows, things like that. And then there's going to be sort of a heavy rock level with volcanoes, and the ground's going to crack open and lava's going to fly out. So, yeah, quite a varied game.
It certainly sounds like it. So exactly, I mean, how did you go about designing the differences in terms of how did you be able to get the game to recognize certain movements and songs that would indicate enough for it to design a level that way?
The technique I'm using is probably more like the way a Guitar Hero level would be designed. Mm-hmm. So I've got my own tool where I can load in a piece of music, and I'll actually listen to it, and I'll note down using this tool what events I want to happen where. So like in Guitar Hero, when you're not actually using the real music, Guitar Hero doesn't use the notes because you've only got five buttons. So what I'm doing is something very similar, where I'm saying, I want this event to happen here because I just like the way this piece of music sounds, and it makes me think of this. So I can really tailor everything I want when I want it to happen.
Yes, it certainly sounds like it. Now, we've talked to a lot of independent developers, a lot of one- and two-man teams specifically, and a lot of them speak of this kind of anxiousness and apprehension about starting an independent production in an industry that's very much Activision and EA. So, I mean, could you talk about that a little bit? I mean, what kind of emotions are you going through when you first decide to put out a game by yourself?
There's a lot of emotions that go through it, and I think really one of the things you have to accept is that you're going to be really connected to the game you're making, and you sort of feel everything, that every bad thing that happens and every good thing that happens, everything's your fault. So you've got to be ready to take on that side of things. There's also the idea that programming is a very hard thing to schedule, even for myself, I've worked on programming for full time for 4 years now, and I still don't know how long something's going to take me. So there's a lot of risk, and I think it takes a certain kind of person. I don't think everyone in the industry is going to get up and leave and work on their own, because there's a certain type of personality, I think, that you've got to be a bit reckless, really, I guess.
Yeah, I don't really see a lot of even small 20-team developer heads just breaking off and thinking they can do it by themselves. So you definitely have a bit – you definitely have guts in doing it so yourself. Have you been paying attention to the industry at large at all? Have you heard about these independent publishing platforms like Telltale's Pilot Program and recently Interplay's Discovery platform?
Yeah, I kind of look at them with suspicion, because I think – the publisher's got to get something out of it, and no publisher's going to support an indie developer out of the goodness of their heart. And I look at some of these programs, and they kind of look too good to be true, because they're saying, we won't take your IP, we're just going to publish your game. And I don't think, well, I mean, that might be true, but they're going to get something out of it, and I can't quite tell what that is, to be honest, so I'm a bit skeptical. But
So you're thinking they may, like, actually, when they publish their game, they're going to take a larger take of each purchase? Or do you think that you're just going to lose all rights to the IP?
Well, I think one of the things that – one of the reasons they might be doing this, which is actually quite honest, is that a publisher takes a lot of risk in their business all the time, and – you know, they've got a lot of people on their payroll. The reason why publishers don't take too many risks is because they've got so many people that they employ. So that's one of the reasons. So they can't take risks. And when they look at the way the industry is changing, and the way a lot of games are now becoming smaller, and they're so used to making bigger and bigger games as they go on, it's very hard for them to get out of that pattern without taking another huge risk. So I think they're trying to look at study the way indie developers are working, so that they can pick up on that business model and try and make these smaller games themselves, because it's not something they're really used to doing. So I think they're possibly trying to learn from indie developers as well.
So you're expecting in the future to have a lot more like Activision episodic games or EA $10 two-hour games?
Yeah, definitely. I think the industry's right now is in a really dynamic point, and it's changing, and the business models are changing. And one of the interesting things that I think at the moment is everyone can see that the industry's changing, but no one really knows where it's going. Mm. So it's a really interesting time, and I think publishers are looking at all sorts of different things as much as they can to try to work out where to go next.
Yeah, well, certainly, I mean, even analysts have been debating for quite a while where the industry is going next, but we certainly know where it came from. And as an independent developer, do you think now is the best time for you to come forth and attempt to distribute your own product, or do you think you could have done this sort of thing 5, maybe 10 years ago?
For me, I didn't have the money to do it 5 years ago.
Okay, given that you had the same circumstances 5 or 10 years ago, do you think that the industry was malleable enough for you to develop and distribute your own product like this?
I think it would be much harder. I think the word indie is like really mainstream now, and people are paying attention to it. Magazines are covering it much more easily, whereas you wouldn't have got that 5 years ago. I think one of the games that really made me pay attention was Darwinia, because when that came out, that was a game that was made by about, I think it was five people, and it was, you know, in the shops being sold and reviewed in real magazines. And that was, when I saw that happen, that was kind of crazy, and I took note of that. So it's been a few years since that came out now, but yeah, I think now it's a lot easier because, you know, people will cover these smaller games that aren't made by publishers with track records, and you know, gamers are paying attention to indie games now more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually talked to the two guys behind Super Meat Boy, and they also had a similar response. Being able to get on actual console distribution services, they didn't think it was possible a couple of years ago. Now, you mentioned, you know, Star Fox, the original Star Fox, not Star Fox 64, as much as our viewers will instantaneously think of when you say Star Fox. List that as your, you know, your main inspiration, your major inspiration, a major product that inspired you. Do you have any similar inspirations or idols in terms of independent games, anything from Telltale or even down to the one developer, like Darwinia?
I like a lot of indie games. I've played quite a lot of indie games. I really like Machinarium. And I really like V. For Substream, I think games like Rez and Audio Surfer, obvious influences. And I really like those games. So I wanted to kind of take that, the music synchronization genre, if you can call it that, and try and push it a bit further and do something different with it. And do more with it, I guess, because I think even now, those kind of games are still scratching the surface of what can be done. So, yeah.
Indeed. So you say that you're not going to be using the gamer's own music track selection. So what can we expect in terms of what you're going to provide for the game?
Okay, so there's going to be a variety of music. How many tracks, I'm not sure yet. I'm going to do as many as I can. But it's going to be basically the widest range of genres I can get my hands on. So there's already rock in there, jazz, there's hip-hop, it's a bit of chiptune. And, yeah, it's because the reason I'm doing that is because, I mean, I like a lot of different kinds of music, but I think with each genre and with each piece of music I choose, I can bring out different moods from them and shape the levels in really different ways. So that should be interesting.
Now, are these licensed tracks or tracks that you made yourself or independently produced tracks?
Some of them are commissioned and some of them are tracks that I've licensed. So I'm really looking at getting as much music as I can, and I'm looking at a lot at the moment and selecting it very carefully, obviously.
Okay. What about an overall structure? Do you have a story mode, or do you have a central hub, or any features outside of just starting a level and ending a level?
No, it's more like a system of unlocks, so there's really no story at all to it. I can't really think of a story that would join everything together, so I think it's best to not to try and hack one over the top of it and just let it be a selection of levels that are independent, really.
No, that's perfectly fine. The unlock structure is basically the core of addictive gameplay, so it's a really good structure to go after. All right, Ben, well, is there any other little nuggets of information you would like us to know about Substream before we let you go?
The website is www.substreamgame.com, and I'll be putting up videos in the future as the game develops. It's a very animated game, so I'm really keen on putting up as many videos as I can while it's being developed, so that people can get an idea of how the gameplay links to the music and how the visuals link to the music and what you can expect. The game's sort of 45% complete at the moment, so there's a lot of room for change in the future, and I don't know particularly where it's going to go in all aspects. So I'm just letting it develop naturally. So, yeah.
Sounds good. So you said next year. Is there any sort of bigger hint you can let us know of when we can get subscreen for ourselves?
I'd say you could probably expect it around the middle of the year.
Okay, that's calendar year, not fiscal year.
Yeah, that's calendar year. So in the summer sometime, I should think.
Okay, guys, you heard it here first. Summer 2011, pick up Ben Bradley's owned one-man-developed game, Substream, the evolving music rhythm game that all the stages evolve with the music that you're playing. And, yeah, thank you very much, Ben, for coming on the show. And, yeah, thank you very much.
All right. No problem. Thank you.
All right, guys, and if you want to see all the other episodes of Elder Geek Interviews and all the news, reviews, previews that matter in the games industry, make sure you're at right now or head over to elder-geek.com. All right, guys, we'll see you next time.
I love it! Total Carnage! Mamma mia! There will be only chaos!
Chief, can you hear me?